Hi, everybody. Welcome to the very first episode of A Nurturing Pod. We are over here at A Nurturing Mind in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And we are here sharing a little bit about ourselves and debunking some therapy myths. So I think we can just do a little intro for each of us and then dive in, say what we think about these therapy myths, what our experience with them has been. So I'm Lisa. I'm a marriage and family therapist intern. I'm a student at Northwestern getting a degree, a master's in marriage and family therapy. And I have been seeing clients for about 2 months. And then I've been here about 4 months. It's the best.
Huh? Christy, please.
Oh, man, we're interning up in a row here.
Yeah.
I'm Christy Gall. I am also a marriage and family therapist intern, like Lisa. I graduate, knock on all the wood, in December.
Real.
And at that point, we'll become an official therapist. I have been seeing clients, what do you think, guys, about a year here?
Yeah,
at
I have not a year yet. Yep.
Been awesome. And I am in the midst of a career shift. I am what I tell people, a recovering attorney prior to the experience.
That's amazing.
And it's been awesome. Excited to talk about the myths and non-myths of therapy here.
Oh,
perfect.
I like that.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know we were saying how long we've been doing this. I'm trying to do math in my head.
1974.
I am Taryn Sharkey. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
You didn't hear that.
I don't know. I've been doing therapy. I'm doing quick math in my head, okay? Math is not my strong point. Let's see. 18 years, I believe.
I think you got your license in 2012.
2012, 2013, something like that.
Because I got mine at 14.
Been in the field. I think 18 years. So, yeah.
Someone's a pro over here.
No.
Super
not
pro.
A pro, just enjoy it. So, that's me.
Yeah.
Did I miss something?
You missed the most important thing.
What's the most important thing?
Who owns the practice?
Oh, there you go, there you go.
Well, you know. I'm the owner of the practice. I'm just here, you know, with some really awesome people to fucking miss. So.
Yes.
All right, Zach.
Well, I will follow that up. My name's Zach Galicio. I'm a clinician and supervisor here, and I'm also here with some really awesome people. I started with Taryn about 5 years ago.
Oh, at the practice,
At the practice, yeah.
I was going to say, we've known each other much longer than that.
Yes. Now, Taryn's been doing this a little bit longer than me because I think I got my license a year or two after Taryn. What I think makes this practice so special and why I'm so glad that we're doing this is it's the people here and the relationships that we have here and why we're so excited to share this podcast with everyone.
Zach, you're supposed to introduce yourself. So typical.
What did I do?
Turn it back around. Zach is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
I've
been doing this for a while.
I've been doing this for a while.
Finishing up his doctorate.
If you could see me, you would see
my gray hair. The most wonderful supervisor.
Any day now, he's our clinical supervisor.
Yeah.
He's absolutely amazing clinical supervisor. We need 20 of him.
What would we do without him? Mm. Also, you still own a bar.
That was my interesting fact. I used to own a bar, yes.
I love it.
So it's a double therapist experience.
Yes. That's right. I'm part of the PMFT board, a service treasurer there.
Amazing.
And then I'm
also a
faculty
teacher.
Member. Yep, teacher. I have two books coming out this year.
Wow.
Keep it going. Our whole podcast. Maybe I shouldn't have said Zach should talk more about himself. All right, Zach's the best. All right.
The best.
Not a therapy myth. That's a therapy truth.
That's our first myth.
That's debunked. Yeah. No, I think that should be our episode title. I love it. Amazing. So, yeah, jumping in to some therapy myths. I think this first one, I hear a lot. People will make jokes to me, like, that you have to be so, you know, quote unquote crazy or out there to come to therapy. What do you guys think about that? What comes to mind?
Well, I take personal offense to that.
Oh yeah, sure. Me too.
Not only in the career that I am sort of pursuing right now, but I love my therapist and think I'm a little nutty, but not totally off the deep end here. But I also think it's shifting now. I think that has been a stigma stuck with therapy for a while.
Right.
And And with more access in the last, I don't know, really 4 years, I feel like that was a silver lining of the awfulness that was COVID, of being able to consider, like, what is this doing to our mental health? People have thought, how can therapy help me? And also, what I love about what we do, we're all MFTs here, is we think about therapy relationally. So it's not about, oh, a person is experiencing something so far, so that's a mental health issue that requires the need of a therapist. It's how can we relationally improve our interactions with each other as a couple, as a family, as friends.
Yes.
And I don't know, I love that about it.
Right, and how do you build community, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, the archaic view of like this antiquated, there's something wrong with me perspective is just that, because like Christy, as you were saying, is if a parent or family comes in for therapy and says, we need help, we need support with parenting our kid, do we look at that person or that system and say, well, you're crazy? Or should society look at that person or that system and say that you're crazy? And I think if you do, then maybe we need to reevaluate and provide some education on what therapy is and how it can be helpful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, certainly we can dive into what therapy really is, because I think a lot of people think therapy is just talking. You know, people will say, like, why are you in therapy? You could just talk to someone in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, I feel, common myth that comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is so unfair, because really, I think a top quality I have learned that is so essential to our work is creativity, you know, and coming up with specific ideas.
I love that. You're so right, Lisa. And Taryn and Zach, I would love to hear what you guys kind of think of all the time of what's the difference between a therapist and a friend.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's
how you've had to navigate that.
Definitely.
Yeah. With your experience.
Well, I'm even thinking about like the myths and stuff, like, and there's been so much talk about it, I think especially lately, about how if you go to a gym and get a personal trainer, or, you know, you go to a doctor because you're seeking out something medically, it's okay. And there's no, you know, that's normal. But like therapy is looked at so differently. And I think that also speaks to your question, Christy, of like, you know, my friend might go to the gym every day, but they don't know how to train me for a marathon, or they don't know how to train me to build muscle, or, you know, a nutritionist helping me to figure out like what foods work best with my body. So I just think when it comes to therapy, like, friends are great. Relationships are crucial for outside of the work you do. Like, it takes a village, for sure, I think, in any aspect of our life. But when it comes to therapy, like going to a therapist who's trained to know, just like a personal trainer would, like what can be helpful, how the brain works, how different like ways we cope with things play out, how our past plays out, childhood, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be a little different, and it's non-biased, you know. It doesn't put that, you know, and it doesn't put your friend in that position where it's like, ooh, I don't know what to say, because really, I think this is an area that you know, could be, might be a little uncomfortable, but could help you grow. So
it's more safe to be challenged.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have your friends, and they're really important. And sometimes therapy, you come in and you just need to vent.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like that, but it's not, I don't think it should be something that is ongoing every single session where you feel like it's the same as what it would be if it was like a friend.
I love that, Taryn. I love also you and Zach are always so good at using metaphors to get the point across, and the using a personal trainer, I feel like, is really helpful here, because it is about how do we help clients exercise certain muscles in their hearts, in their brains, and in their relationships, which is not what you're thinking about as a friend. You're thinking about, how can I make you feel better?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let me get you a thing of ice cream and let's talk. And also, like, just with, like, if we use a physical, like, personal training or working out something, people that do it but aren't trained in it, you can get hurt.
Yes.
You know, like, you can say, this is really bothering me. Oh, well, this will work. But you can get hurt. And I think in therapy, it's similar too. Like, you can train the wrong muscles. Like, you can train,
absolutely,
or you can do things that you think are training the right muscles, but really it's not helping, and it could be hurting. So I think therapists also are trained to be able to help you figure things out that will hopefully heal the right parts, and not like have you overcompensate something else so that something else is hurting you.
To keep doing patterns that feel supportive but are actually, to use a therapy term, maladaptive and healthy interactions.
Yeah.
I think a therapist can challenge you when you're ready and maybe have more of a sense And to use the personal training metaphor, can kind of incrementally add weight, add reps. Mm-hmm. Whereas a friend almost may be too directive and may say, here's what you should do, and jump in all at once. Mm-hmm. Or just completely avoid it and not want to hurt their feelings.
Like, yeah,
and
oh my gosh, that's horrible.
You're so right. No, seriously. Yeah. So no.
And you need both.
Right. Yes.
Like, let's be honest. You need both. You can't just have friends and you can't just have therapists. We need that balance.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
What do you got, Zach?
All good therapists. Here we go. Is should be
all. I love that.
All good therapists should be advocating for every one of their clients to be expanding their ecosystem, because friendships are therapeutic and friendships are not therapists.
Whoa. That's good.
Yeah. Hashtag that.
All right. Beautiful distinction.
Wow. Yes.
Love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Debunked.
Absolutely. Speaking of, this is an interesting one. People think that a therapist is just kind of a paid friend, which I think is so funny, because there are so many distinctions we draw and so many ethical things about, you know, not being friends with your client. So I think it's kind of a funny idea that people just think that's all we're here for.
Totally.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny? Like, alongside that feels like very generalized about therapists, just like it feels really generalized about friends. Like, you have friends that fulfill different roles for you. Mm-hmm. And also, like, reminds me of another myth about therapy. And I felt like is an attorney too. You can't do all things. Therapists don't do all things. There's tons of different therapeutic practices and ways that we like conceptualize and think about the world, and ways that we intervene and want to help our clients sort of take control over their own lives.
Right.
And they are just like you go to, this is one of your favorite metaphors, Zach, I know, you would go see a cardiothoracic surgeon if you're having heart issues. But you wouldn't ask them about
your teeth.
There are.
Although they're saying that your dental health is maybe I shouldn't have used that as an example. Dental health is linked to heart disease.
You know what I will say, though?
I'll be dead in 6 months.
That's such a great point, Taryn, too, because it's not that these things aren't connected. But that's why it's important to also know when you need to rely on other experts. And with therapists, I mean, I've, in my short time practicing, I've referred multiple times, and I'm so grateful for it, and have been referred to, and to be able to work together with people who manage different things has been beneficial to clients who are coming in with a huge range of health issues or mental health issues.
That makes me think of another myth, that all therapists do the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I do think that's like therapists get lumped into this like
therapy. About that?
But even like with what you're saying, there's like EMDR. Yep. There's like we're all trained family therapists, so we're very relational. We work a lot with families, kids. But even if we work with an individual, we see it very differently than someone who's a behavioralist or somebody that's also a myth too, I think, that people get confused by, in that we do each kind of have our own specialty.
Yep.
And we should. I guess I should say we should. Like therapists that say that they, you know, see it all. Like, I mean, we see a lot, but I would never say I specialize in eating disorders. I would never say I specialize in drug and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I can work with a family system that's struggling with somebody who's using or has used, but that's different than drug and alcohol counseling. So I think also understanding that therapy is not this like catch-all, is very specific.
Right. Yep.
And we are almost like, you know, the different doctors that you see.
Right.
And if you're looking for a therapist, to be mindful of that, because you want to call somebody who, you know, you want to seek someone out and you know, see somebody who works within those things that you're
what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I also think it's such a red flag if a therapist claims to have all the answers or claims to be able to fix everything right away. I think that's another common thing that people will come in expecting
to be fixed.
Yes. Expecting you to know exactly what to do, when really I can't imagine just having one session with a client. I like, has that ever happened with any of you guys, like where you have a one-off?
Only if someone's not committed to continue.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just where you've one session and they're like, okay, I feel resolved about, like, I can't imagine. Like, it's such a process.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a relationship.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh,
yes. 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what we're learning, what Lisa and I are learning now, and I'm sure you guys have seen play out a million times with your clients, is the two most important things for change in a client system is the client's state of mind coming in and willingness to engage, and the relationship with the therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, 100%.
Those two things matter.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's so much more important than any specific thing we might do, just that a client feels safe and comfortable. Mm-hmm.
But that takes a process. Relationships are never developed in a single session. And that means you're not fixing a problem. You're working to sort of develop patterns and processes together, which is evolving always.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Which I think is when you ask, you know, what, you know, like you said, Taryn, for better or for worse, our profession has followed the medical model, and you know, you wouldn't, to your point, is we wouldn't see a cardiothoracic surgeon if you needed, you know, brain surgery.
You guys are using
right?
Such big cardiologist? Is there a difference? Like, what is this?
I like,
is
this something you couldn't think of the end of the word, Taryn? That was my problem.
Is that a real word?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I mean, cardiologist. Like, what are you talking? Obviously, people are much smarter in this room.
No, that's not true.
But we're seeing some very interesting specialists. But cardio.
Oh, cardiothoracic surgeon.
Thoracic. Your
thoracic area.
Thoracic.
Oh, okay.
Cardiothoracic.
No, I didn't know that.
All right. Hashtag to all those. Hi, cardiothoracic surgeons.
You are valued. We see you.
We're going to get the statistics back.
That's
it's going to be like 90% of your listeners.
Sorry. I just...
Zach, did you have a
question? I did, but it's somewhere over there now.
Zach's probably working with a lot of women.
That's great.
Do you remember? You forgot it.
You know, I did forget it, but something else came to mind.
Great.
Is I think another episode, which is related to what we're all talking about, you know, when people ask what value can I get from a therapist, is I think our profession and our society hasn't done a great job of educating what letters mean and what certificates mean and what education means. You know, as a prospective client, when you're looking for a therapist to work with sleep challenges, or you're looking for a client to work with family therapy challenges, is finding, you know, having some education around an LPC is different than an LMFT, which is different than an LCSW, which is different than a psychologist, different than a psychiatrist, and et cetera, different than an EMDR therapist, and et cetera, and really being able to advocate that not every therapist can provide you with everything that you need. They might not have the competence or confidence to recognize and identify, this is what I need coming to therapy, and this is what I want to get out of it. So that could be a whole other episode of the alphabet soup of letters.
Yeah. And questions you can ask as a client.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
And ways to recognize if someone is at least has like is a good therapist in that regard, to recognize both their strengths and where they need support and help and where they
require. Yeah, like the interview process, exactly, Christy, of like if you're a potential client coming in to see a therapist is asking like, can you provide my son or daughter with an evaluation for AS to autism spectrum disorder, right?
Right.
Or ADHD. Right, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, is that something that you do?
Yep.
If not, where can I go, or who do you know, or do you have experience working with me and my partner couples, and so.
And another major myth that's coming to mind for me, I feel like this was a thing in a lot of TV shows and movies, you know, that therapists blame everything on childhood and parents, which I think is funny because, you know, what do they say? Like, a lot of myths have a bit of truth in them, you know, like 5% truth. But it's just so much more complicated than that.
Well, and what an interesting word, blame, right?
Yeah,
I feel like it would be doing anyone a disservice to sort of frame it that way.
Absolutely.
Because what we like to think about is influences. Like, what are the circumstances that are influencing you to behave, to feel, to think the way that you are right now? And inevitably, yes, your childhood, your family is a piece of that.
Yeah.
But But blame feels like a very much, this was something wrong and this is what you have to do differently, as opposed to maybe a, how do we understand this in a different way?
Do you guys hear that from clients a lot, though? Like, this is a problem because of my, my parents did this to me and now I'm doing it myself.
Sure. Yeah. And it's a great, you know, for me, it goes back to like, what can a therapist provide or how valuable can they be? It's like anybody could say that, mm-hmm. you know, so it's, if that's what your therapist is immediately going on session number one, it's all your family's fault and, you know, you had a fucked up childhood, it might be time to at least consider, should I be, you know, seeing someone else?
Yeah.
You know?
Right, instead of getting to know the full person and picture for who they are.
Right.
100%.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up an interesting point. Have you ever, you know, in a first session, have you ever been asked something where you're thinking, or in a session in general, where you're thinking, where that comes off like a myth? Like, for example, I will have clients say to me, like, give me advice on this. I need your advice. I need your
sure.
take. What should I do?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a very common thing that therapists give advice. Give,
sure,
you know,
that is, yeah.
Absolutely.
A
and
common myth.
A common
yeah,
myth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yes.
No, and I think it's really interesting because I will always try, I'll never outright correct it, or at least I haven't yet, but I'll always say, like, you know, maybe you could, what would it feel like, you know, kind of reframing that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You run the risk if you downright tell a client what to do is that you don't respect their own autonomy and that you're not
right.
giving them the respect that they know their life better. You don't know their life better than they do.
Yes.
So you run that risk if you just downright say, well, do this or do that, you know. And
you take away an ability for them to practice taking control.
That
competent,
yep.
I think that there is a myth that therapy is really expensive.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
And I think it can be, that can definitely be a gating item
yeah.
for folks, and I don't want to downplay it because it is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Access to care is real.
That's like a whole other episode, Christy. You're
completely.
Absolutely right.
Yes.
100%.
And so I wouldn't even say it's an entire myth, but I would say that it is in the process of being dismantled through alternative ways to access
yes.
therapy than what you would traditionally think of. Like,
right.
you don't only have to go to a very expensive private practice, for example. There's a range of places to access care, clinical health, through hospitals, through
mm-hmm.
Community centers, and even in private practices, I know for ours especially, sliding scale available, but the fact that, you know, Lisa and I are interns puts us in a position where you get the benefit of a supervisor overseeing us and sort of access to us in the learning process, and then you pay for that accordingly, which is less.
So
there's just a range, and I think besides just a nurturing mind, like, there are now lots of sites out there that recognize the difficulty in accessing care, and there's sliding scales available there. I know OpenPath is one of those
mm-hmm.
options, and I think there are others out there too.
Sure.
And I think many practices recognize, and it's important. People get into therapy because they like to help people,
mm-hmm.
and it feels
yeah.
shitty to be like, so sorry, can you not?
Yeah.
So finding ways around that is important to therapists.
100%.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. Well,
I would also say, don't always assume. So we have two therapists now who accept insurance. Well, three, I guess, but who accept insurance, a couple insurances.
Mm.
But I think people assume when they call, because I've talked to a lot of people lately with insurance, like, oh, I have to go through my insurance. And then we call their insurance, and
uh-huh.
insurance is not always the cheapest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I call insurance, and you have to hit a $6,000 deductible. $3,000 might be, I don't know. Maybe if you have 3-4 months left of the year, you're never going to hit that, maybe at the beginning of the year. But still, you have these deductibles, and people don't realize that you don't really get the benefit of the insurance until you pay that deductible. So also just knowing different things like that, knowing
totally.
What's covered, knowing if places have sliding scales, have interns. I mean, those things sometimes can be even better than insurance, because I know
mm-hmm.
insurance is a, you know, beast of its own.
Yeah.
And don't get tied up in that. Like, if someone is not accepting your insurance, maybe it would actually be cheaper to do something else. So,
yeah.
right.
you know, being, you know, educating yourself, figuring out, you know, what your plan covers, or you can call, we can help you, or there's sites, like, don't always just assume insurance is going to be like a $20 copay, because unfortunately it's not.
Yep.
And so there's other options that are available too, so that therapy can be you know, something that you can access and it not financially burdening you and your family.
100%. Yeah. And I think it can be really hard and scary and overwhelming to look for a therapist because there are so many options.
Yeah, how do you whittle it down?
Exactly. Where to even start.
Yep.
And I think the reasons for coming for therapy, that's another myth that's coming to mind for me. Like I have had people in my life joke to me, people in my family, when I say I'm training to be a marriage and family therapist one day, they'll kind of joke and they'll say like, oh, we need that, you know, joking, like, you know, we, you know, people who come to therapy always have to have problems. When I think one thing that stood out so much about A Nurturing Mind before I was here, was this option of, specifically under the couples therapy thing, I always remember this, of not even just unpacking problems, but starting before there is a problem, like deepening relationships and asking important questions before they come up as conflicts.
Strengthening things before you know challenging shifts are going to occur, for example.
Yeah, transitions.
If you're about to have a baby, or
yeah.
You know, there's going to be a transition
or a transitional illness.
There's a whole variety.
Even just getting to know yourself better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Which I think is also like complemented by the fact that all the therapists that I know here are very strengths-based.
Mm.
And so it's finding things in all of our clients that already exist and then being able to build upon and then find more as a result of flexing those muscles. So.
Right. I think that's another thing that differentiates us from anyone else, from friends, from anyone in someone's life, is that we are so trained, right, to see strengths and amplify them. Like, really to see what someone is saying and go from there and not insert our own things, but just work with what the client is saying.
Oh, I have a good one.
Ooh,
I have a good one to wrap it up.
Oh, perfect.
Tell us.
I have a good, well, I think it's a good one. Hopefully it's good. Is this myth, it kind of goes with what we were talking about earlier about fixing, but that you can drop off your kid and we will fix them.
Oh, that is a good one. We're all family therapists.
We do a lot with kids. We do a lot with families. I love this one because it is not the
false case.
Right.
and I would never, ever want that kind of
responsibility.
Yeah, authority over your child. So I think when there's a child that's a client that's struggling with whatever they are, it is so crucial to include their parents, their grandparents, their family, their system, whoever is their support system, especially the younger you get, because, you know, a six-year-old that you drop off for an hour, like, how are we going to, even if we do amazing work, like, how are we going to bridge that for the other, for the other 23 hours of the day, you know, 7 days a week? And so I love it. But also it's a myth that's hard because, I love it because it gives us an opportunity, I think, to really empower the parents, because my hypothesis is sometimes that the parents haven't been empowered and that's why they think that other people, whether it's a school, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a doctor, have more knowledge of their own child or have more,
they're the expert.
Yeah, like they're the expert. Thank you. So for me, it's like exciting because it's like, all right, how do I empower this parent? Because I think
you've got it.
That they're the best person for the job. Like I can support and help and coach and whatever. But it's also hard because I do think that that's a myth that is true in a lot of areas of our society.
Yes.
And
it goes
unfortunate.
Back to fixing,
too.
Yes.
Because it's not about fixing, ultimately.
And
no.
You need the parent to be involved, I feel like, in most cases.
Yeah.
Like, you need that connection there to work on it. Like, you can't just do it alone.
Yep.
And that's, again, not blaming.
Right.
It could be nothing related to the parent, the family at all. It could be something that happened at school that they were bullied. Okay. But how then is the parent going to be able to know these skills or strategies to support them when it matters? Because you can't
to help them support themselves.
Another myth, like you can't just call your therapist at 2 a.m. They're not available 24/7, you know?
Well,
like,
some therapists allow that.
Well, some therapists might, but you know, when that kid wakes up from a nightmare because they were bullied at school, who's going to be there to support them? It's not going to be, oh my gosh, I got to call Taryn, hold on. I'm not answering, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, that's not happening. So I'm sleeping. Or my own child is waking me up. So, you know, I think that that's like, such a big myth for us, at least as family therapists, is that the parents are not an important part of the process with their children. And I'm here to tell you, you are the most important person. We need you. Your kid needs you.
Right.
And then we'll help you help your kid however is needed. But we need you. You need to be here. Please don't give away that power, because it is really important for you and your child.
And we care about you and your thoughts and want to hear from you. Yeah, that's all important.
Yeah.
100%.
So,
Well, this was such a great conversation. Yay! We did it. Thank you guys so much for chatting.
Lisa, our host. Our host here.
That is Lisa.
Yay. Oh my gosh. Right, thanks
Lisa.
So much.
Lisa over here. And she had a birthday.
That's right.
So, celebrating birthday yesterday. So she's still on birthday high, maybe.
This is the best present. We're debunking it. I love it. and thank you so much for listening to our very first episode. Yeah, absolutely. Whenever I drop this on social media, if you have comments, questions, other myths, other topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, please let us know. This has been a Nurturing Pod. Thank you so much.